Hello and welcome to the Echo Chamber Podcast. My name is Tony Groves, and today we're back talking to Aoife Grace Moore. And Martin, time is of the essence, so we'll spare the fact that you look like you were dragged through a bush backwards, and we'll get straight into it. Aoife, you, I suppose since we last spoke, one of the things that's happened is actually you won an award recently. And part of it was for the, well, you won several awards, really, but one of the awards, one of them was for the coverage of stories like you'd covered today for the Department of Social Protection, sending inspectors into a single mother's home. And I suppose, look, if you haven't read the story, it'll be on the blurb, lads. You can just click on the link. You have to read it. But Aoife, do you want to give us a quick background to the story and why it's so troubling?
Yeah, so I have done a number of these stories now about social welfare inspectors who are looking into the single parent payment. I think years ago it was referred to as the single mother's payment. By and large, I think 90% at least of the people on this tend to be women. And the pattern that I am continuing to see in my previous reporting has shown this, is that it appears that it all comes down to the social welfare inspector that you are given. And some people have really good relationships with their social welfare inspector, or others have absolutely terrible relationships, and it all basically comes down to the person. So in this instance, the story from Monday was that a young woman in her 20s was from one part of Dublin. She suffered an incredibly violent attack from her ex-partner, and because of that, she moved to a completely different part of Dublin. When she moved to the new area, she was told, or she got a letter from the local social welfare office to say that she was having a review of her single parent payment, which is regular enough. She said she had no issue with that. She has three children. She's worked on and off for 7 years since she's had her kids, but she's on the single parent payment now. She immediately came into issues with this social welfare inspector. She was accused of not filling out certain forms, which she did not receive. And because she didn't receive the forms, they stopped her payment for 9 weeks in a pandemic. And from then, it just got bad to worse. So she provided me with the letter that the social welfare office sent to her. And it was as bizarre as it was troubling. So in one letter, they asked for bank details or bank statements, which is regular enough. You know, that's what they're looking for. Then they asked her how she paid for her TV provider, how she paid for her bins and rubbish, and then she was asked for the baptismal certificates of her three children and the details of their godparents. She was asked who was there with her when she gave birth to her three children and wanted details from the hospital. She was then told that a car had been observed in the driveway of her house and demanded the car insurance details of this car, which she does not own. She gets the father of her children to park his car outside her house because she lives in fear of her ex-partner. So she thinks if he parks his car outside her house, it might put the violent partner off coming to the house. She does not open the door to unknown people. She does not answer unknown numbers. And she has explained all this in detail to the social welfare inspector. She said that the woman just does not want to know. She then, in the letter, attached a now deleted Facebook post from a number of years ago with the father of her children when they were engaged. She had put, you know, like a life, like you can put up, you know, different parts of your life on
an update.
So it was like, you know, your life updates or whatever. And she wrote, got engaged. Now, this is many years ago. She also said that she has had her Facebook on private for years. And also this post has now been deleted. So she's not sure where or how they got this post. And she is no longer with the father of her children. She has explained it numerous times. And Yeah, she said she feels bullied, she feels harassed. Now, this girl suffers with PTSD and anxiety because of, obviously, the violent relationship that she was in. And this has been made exponentially worse because she said she lives in fear that her house is being watched anyway. And now the social welfare inspector has admitted that there are people watching her house. And all of this is to find out whether this single woman is maybe getting a few euro more than she should be. And what galls me and has galled me since I started doing these investigations is that it's proven time and again that the most wastage or overpayment in the social welfare actually comes from pensions.
Yeah.
And the number of checks carried out on pensions is a fraction of what is carried out on single women with their children on single parent payment.
Just going to pause the podcast again, because I'm sure at this stage it's probably getting on your nerves. But if it is getting on your nerves, actually, if you are a supporter at patreon.com/tortoiseshack, you don't get these. These are just simply add-ins for people who are getting the product for free. And I think because even though it's free, it has value. I think that's fair enough, Martin. Yeah.
Yeah, no, for the amount of work that's going on as well, Tony. I mean, we do a lot more than just podcasts. We do an awful lot of work. So yeah, I think it's worth it. And I know that a lot of people enjoy and listen. We're not getting 30,000 on days, Tony, for no reason. You know, people are listening because it's good listening. But we have no adverts. We have no sponsors. So look, stick your hand in your pocket. That's the least you can do.
If I could, I would also like to recommend some of the stuff that's on the pod, on the Tortoise Shack. There's some great stuff obviously coming out, but we have a new podcast called Built Different. Benita and Joella are doing some terrific conversations. There's three new podcasts. Wherever you're going to find your podcast, it's Built Different. The police podcast continues, and I get more hate about police podcasts, Martin, than I do any other podcast, and that includes anything stupid you say. I don't get a fraction of the grief I get from you.
I don't say anything stupid, Tony. It's simple.
But I tell you, if police is continuing to knock it out of the park, so make sure you check it out. And again, if you like what we do, please help it keep going, because I don't mean to. It's early on in the month. This is the time when you get the best value for it. You check it out. You see what it's worth. But it's patreon.com/tortoiseshack. And we do actually really, really genuinely need the support. If you are supporting us, please continue. And thank you so much. It really makes all the difference. Let you get back to your podcast. I'm reminded of the phrase that Mary McAuliffe gave us years ago, Martin, when we started the podcast, that the poor are always convicted of poverty in Ireland, and we always pick on single mothers first. I'm also reminded of when the now tarnished did his campaign for the welfare cheats cheat us all, and they had to apologize a few months later to say that when they did the actual inspection rates, I think, Martin, I'm right in saying the detection rate that came in that was actually fraud, not them overpayments due to, you know, the department's own problems, was less than 0.002%. Am I correct on that?
And lone parents in particular are a group within the social welfare where there's very, very little wrongdoing going on in lone parents. Now, you know, I read a lot of this stuff, Tony. I read an awful lot of social welfare reports. The amount of money involved in going after lone parents is infinitesimal. It's teeny tiny. And just last week, Heather Humphreys, and she said this in the Dáil, that going after employers for social welfare problems may cause more problems than it solves. Now, I can't get my head around this. You're going after a lone parent for maybe a tenner, and this 240 million from construction alone every year, but it may cause more problems than it solves to go after that. I mean, what's going on? What is going on?
If you get these people bringing you these stories, and it's the most, I suppose, I put it to you, and not to put words in your mouth, there's a class issue here.
Yeah.
And it seems to me that quite often, you're right to say it depends on, maybe you get an individual who's had a bad day and they decide that this is something they take on. But it does seem there's an inequity in a system whereby, you know, we see, like, I know, Martin, you famously, me and you last, we had a big row on the podcast a few months ago where you were saying if they can go through, if the revenue can go through a single mother's knicker drawer and they mm-hmm. can't go through this, surely that must come to the fore when you're reporting on these. Do you feel the inequality and the idea that this is victimization again of people who are already going through a traumatic episode?
Yeah, and the thing is, you know, the woman that I speak to, like I've spoke to, I'd say we're well up into the 20s now, of women that this has happened to. And it is a class issue. You know, none of these women live in Ballsbridge. You know, it is definitely a class issue. I think it goes back to Ireland's original sin is how we treat women, how we treat pregnant women, how we treat illegitimate children. I think it is the most stark representation of the hangover that we have about how, you know, how we've treated women in this country. And I think something I really remember is when the first story I did came out and we ran a full special report on it, and a TD came to me, a TD very proudly and openly working class TD came to me and said, I have sat in living rooms with my constituents when I was a councillor because the social welfare man was coming and they were so intimidated and so afraid. They asked me to come and sit in their living rooms with them so that someone else could be there. And he said, I never thought for 1 minute to tell a journalist about this because I never thought for 1 minute that it would be a story or that people would care. And I think if you grow up, and I know people in my family, and maybe that's why, you know, I did the story or whatever. If you grew up knowing about the social welfare inspector, you know very clearly that this is a class issue. And you know very clearly why they're coming to your house. They are not chasing down the men who are supposed to be paying child maintenance for their children. But they are coming into women's houses and in some cases going through their knicker drawers and telling them that they cannot have boyfriends because they might be getting an extra tenner. I have heard the craziest stories, you know, someone almost losing 3 children's worth of social parent payment because there was 1 extra toothbrush in the bathroom.
Yeah.
It is, and it, I don't understand why, you know, when I did the story and I went to the department press office. And to be fair, the woman in the press office did seem incredibly concerned. She contacted me a number of times and asked, could I pass on her details to the woman involved? They said in their statement, you know, this is outside their realms of appropriateness. This is not what's supposed to be happening. But there does not seem to be any oversight for these officers. And it comes down to the person on the day. And no official from the state should have that power that if they're having some kind of day that they can turn up to your house and make you feel like absolute shite because you are getting benefits that you are due.
Can I disagree? It's not really a disagreement with you, but it's with both of you. It's more than a class issue. There is a religious bent to all of this as well. As you know, Aoife, not this year, but the year before last, I had to go to solicitors for lone parents who were under awful stress. Same thing, cars parked, told there was a car parked outside. And I've gone to solicitors to seek help for these people. And basically, they've no right to do any of it. But what they're looking for is a father's name. Now, one woman who had a very, very violent ex-husband, and she had several barring orders against him and even police protection at one stage. And the Department of Social Welfare was insisting that she identify the father so that they could go after him. Now, there's only one place he's going once he's identified, and that's back to smash her face in. So why should she be put under that pressure from the Department of Social Welfare?
For a few quid, Mark. It's for a few quid.
Look, Tony, they're turning, and we know this, and they are turning a blind eye to massive fraud.
I can't help remember, like, Davies are being sold to Bank of Ireland at the moment for 40 million after a couple of months after we were all told Davies is the biggest scandal since year dot. I remember the Department of the Office of Corporate Enforcement have losing, like, the. We're all going to talk about austerity in the next few months coming and about how, you know, the national debt is now 240 billion. We keep forgetting that one big part of that is 64 billion from Anglo, and that entire trial collapsed because the staff in the Office of Corporate Enforcement shredded documents.
I know it's very strange, Tony, but you'll know, and I'm not sure if Aoife knows, but I actually have forensic reports that show that the Department of Social Welfare officials are forging documents people.
That comes back to some of, like, you've been involved in that for a long time.
And that is actually on the
Dáil record, but you've put it on the record.
It's on Dáil record, yeah. It's on Dáil record.
So we're happy enough to say that. But Aoife, can I ask just as a you know, like, okay, the story that you covered today. It is just in keeping with some of the stuff that you've covered previously. The departments, the ministers involved, have you had any kind of reaction from them other at all? Is that fair to ask?
None. I have never had any approach from the department will give me a statement. So when you write a story, you obviously have to go to the department involved for write a reply. And they do always reply. You know, they will offer up, there is a complaints procedure that these women can use. And they set out, you know, what exactly the inspectors are allowed and not allowed to do. But in the number of reports that I have done, I have never had an approach from a minister or an official to talk more about it. It was broached in the Dáil under ministers' questions, I believe. Rita Cronin from Sinn Féin, Gary Gannon from the Social Democrats, and someone else have all asked the minister, who was then Helena Humphreys, you know, in light of my reporting, would anything be done? Would there be any system change? Would there be a review? And she said that there wouldn't be, that there were protocols in place. And, you know, I just feel like we're banging our heads off the wall. And it's the same thing with this as it is anything else in Irish society, is that women must split themselves open to be heard, and they have to go to the press and go to people like me and tell me very intimate details about their lives in order to show that the state is failing them or actively harming them in this instance.
It's like, for me, the Department of Social Welfare, and it's much bigger than just the Department of Social Welfare. It's one of the biggest departments with the biggest budgets, and it is completely unaccountable to anybody, anywhere, not in committees, not through ministers, not through the Dáil, not through Dáil questions. Nowhere is it accountable. I mean, my solution has been the same solution for 20 years. Disband the Department of Social Welfare and pay everybody a basic income. And then you wouldn't need it at all, because it's out of control and has been for a very, very long time.
I think, look, Aoife, we might knock that on the head, but if you wouldn't mind, we spoke to Tony Doherty yesterday on the Sunday show, and he obviously, Tony's father was murdered on Bloody Sunday, and he spoke about the fact that we've come to a dead end in terms of the justice for Bloody Sunday. You are obviously someone who's very familiar with it. And I know anybody who's reading your timeline saw that you've been covering it over the weekend. Would you mind me asking you for your personal thoughts on it, if that's not too much of a dig? Because I know it's something that you care about.
Yeah, I mean, this is not, my journalist hat is off now and my personal hat is on. Yeah. I mean, I think our Tony was right yesterday when he said there's a finality to it. It's very rare that I would cry about Bloody Sunday. It's well before my time. It was obviously 1972. I was only born in 91, but it has been you know, a constant in my life. Marches, protests, the Savile inquiry, anything and everything has in my life has been signposted by Bloody Sunday. And we knew the families were informed beforehand that the feeling was that it was going to the case was going to collapse because of the lack of the evidence wouldn't stand up after the Joe McCann trial. And even when it was announced, it was the first time I have cried out of sadness about Bloody Sunday in a very, I think maybe this is the only second time in my life that I cried, because Tony is right in what he says. There's a finality to it. You know, this is it. I said to not the number of my friends on the day is like, I feel like this is the end of the road for us. And although we knew there would never be full justice, I don't know what justice looks like when you take on the British state. You know, was justice just getting even the apology and getting, you know, our relatives' names cleared? But it doesn't make it any less a kick in the teeth, even when you know it's coming. And I felt like what I always say as well is that whether we like it or not, in the North, we are British citizens. Whether you accept that you are or not, technically you are. And for the British government to say that actually you can go onto a street and you can shoot children and unarmed women and men in the head or in the back, and you can walk away from that scot-free, and you will never face any type of justice for it. And there is, as Tony said, it's better than me, no moral authority from the British government to lecture people in Northern Ireland about what we should and should not do and what we should and should not expect from the British government, because although we are their citizens, they do everything to remind us that we're not actually their citizens, that they don't really care about us, and they don't really care about the North in general. I don't feel that any families, you know, we're going to see now basically an amnesty for IRA men, an amnesty for British soldiers, an amnesty for loyalist, you know, murderous gangs. And that's not fair on anyone. And I don't think the North will ever truly move on unless we can look ourselves in the eye and look at what happened over the last 30, 40 years, so we can get some kind of closure. And it is not good enough to turn to people, whether they lost their loved ones through, you know, paramilitary violence or state violence, and say, well, it was a long time ago and you're just going to have to get over it, because that's basically what we have been told.
And it's on all sides, Aoife. As you said, it's going to precipitate this kind of line in the sand where there will be no convictions for anybody, for anything. And it's really burying the past, isn't it?
Yeah, and you need to ask who benefits from that, who benefits from burying the past. I mean, the Savile inquiry was a very expensive inquiry. Ballymurphy has been very expensive. Mm. And as a Bloody Sunday relative, I have always said that you do feel a weird type of guilt because we got our inquiry. We got, you know, the millions we got, Michael Mansfield and everybody else, and we got our day in the sun. And there are families across the North, and especially families who lost people to paramilitary violence, you don't get anything near. You know, if it's the British state, you might get a bit of an inquest. You might get some sort of acknowledgement. But when it comes to paramilitary violence, you get even less. And that's not fair either. And I think it does create a hierarchy of victims and a hierarchy of grief. And I think the only people who really benefit from this amnesty really are the British government, because it's not what the people in the North want. It seems to be that the veterans are the number one priority for the Tory government, and always have been. And all the victims across the North, even if paramilitary violence, will just have to lump it, because the veterans are going to come first, and they are not going to let their own soldiers be held responsible for their actions in the North.
And I think that it shows that the excellent journalist that you are, that you ask the right questions. Qui bono? Who benefits? That is the question to ask. Aoife, thank you so much for coming on and having this chat. It's lovely to talk to an award-winning journalist. It just is. So thank you so much for coming on and having chat with us.
Can I make one little point on mm-hmm. and it's totally outside of the remit, but it reminds me of, if I don't know if you guys are familiar with Anwar al-Awlaki, who was a American Yemeni cleric, he was killed by a US drone strike in Yemen, and the US, Barack Obama took huge heat for a US citizen to be targeted on you know, this was just massive. If you can imagine, I remember the story vividly. If I remember reading all the details about it, and you know, his how he became later radicalized, and maybe other people dispute this with me, but nonetheless, it was this huge thing. And I'm reminded of some of the things I've read about the Bloody Sunday thing. And Aoife, you point out about the British citizenship. This is kind of the same idea of killing British citizens on British soil, and for that to not have any course of justice, guys. I don't know where we go with truth and reconciliation after that. I don't know how you pursue it. I don't, that's just, again, it's only me speaking. It just reminds me, what I mean is there's a global precedent for it and the trouble that it caused in the US government. And you can go check it out. It's not hard to find. It caused a lot more difficulty, and people faced trial for what was done. So I just think, you know, this is not something that we should shy away from. Aoife, really appreciate you taking the time to talk to us. Speaking of controversial guys, we'll be back shortly with Mick Wallace and Claire Daly. So keep an eye on your feeds, because that's going to be fun. Talk to you all very soon. Take care. Bye-bye.
Tony and Martin, Martin and Tony, speaking to interesting people only. It's the Echo Chamber Podcast. Subscribe now on Patreon.